Here's a book to add to your summer reading list, How to Brew by John Palmer. Whether you want simple, surefire instructions for making your first beer, or you're a seasoned home brewer working with all-grain batches, the fourth edition of How to Brew has something for you. The book has been completely updated and expanded, and there are five totally new chapters. Order a copy of How to Brew at brewerspublications.com or grab a copy at your local homebrew supply shop. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, August 10th, 2017. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, more mead talk surrounding HomebrewCon in Minneapolis. Ryan Richardson from the podcast The Mead House shares half a dozen delicious honey-based beverages made with fun ingredients and techniques. If you're new to home brewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And if you buy any of our DVD combos, you get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener. And don't forget to get a copy of our Brewer's Logbook. You can use it to log and track up to 50 batches of beer. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. We also have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, think of us first. Go to basicbrewing.com, look at the Amazon, not only look at the Amazon ad on the right-hand side of the page, click on it. It'll take you back to Amazon. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we greatly appreciate your support. Foster Brooks coming in there a little bit. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site. You can find your Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes or Android app on Amazon.com. We have a Windows Phone app. We're on the BlackBerry Podcast Directory. We're on the Stitcher app. We're on Google Play Music. And we're on the iHeartRadio app as well. And if you do a favor, do us a favor and rate us on iTunes and maybe leave a nice comment. That'll help new listeners to find us. And finally, if you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our virtual guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. And thanks to everybody who has done so already. Things got weirder in the kombucha department this week. As I told you last week, one of my SCOBY soured rye beers turned into a bottle bomb. So I started a couple of experiments to try to track down what went on there. One is a tasty Cascade Pale Ale that I put into a Mr. Beer fermenter that may be contaminated with the SCOBY stuff. I hope it's not, because that's going to be a delicious beer otherwise. It seems to be going well so far. But I also made a batch of 100% rye wort and put another SCOBY into that to kettle sour, thinking I was going to boil the wort this time instead of just pasteurizing it like I did last time. Well, unlike the first attempt, an active fermentation kicked up right away. And after 5 days, the pH had only fallen to 4.2, and it was smelling pretty weird. So I threw it out. I'll have to try that again. Meanwhile, the bottles of the SCOBY soured beer that didn't blow up from that first batch are in the fridge and still pretty tasty. So stay tuned for that. Let's talk about our sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. You've heard Steve and me brag about our electric Brunabag systems with the Warthog controllers that we got from High Gravity, but maybe you lean toward a more traditional three-tier system. Well, High Gravity has you covered there, too. The build-your-own electric brewing system function on highgravitybrew.com lets you customize your three-tier system to fit your needs. And now, High Gravity offers SS BrewTech vessel options, too. High Gravity offers systems that can brew from 5 gallons all the way up to 2 barrels. And you can choose from a variety of Warthog controllers that control your heat pumps, your heat and your pumps as well. Check all that out at check all the electric brewing setups with the Warthog controllers at highgravitybrew.com. That's family-owned and operated, highgravitybrew.com. Okay, let's go back in time where Steve Wilkes from Steve's Brew Shop and Bob Stimsky from Wisconsin and I gathered in a Minneapolis hotel room to sample some delicious meads from Ryan Richardson of the podcast The Mead House. Ryan Richardson, welcome to Basic Broom Radio.
Thank you very much, James.
And we got Steve Wilkes in the house.
Hey, James.
And Bob Stemsky.
Hi, James.
And we're going to taste some meads, and we're going to talk about meads. And we are here with a fellow podcaster. I was going to say a fellow mead podcaster, but we're not just a mead podcaster. But you are from The Mead House, correct?
TheMeadHouse.com. You can pick it up wherever you download your podcasts or visit us online at TheMeadHouse.com.
And how would you describe your podcast for those who aren't familiar?
We are dedicated to helping the home mead maker make better mead, and our tagline is, let us throw the honey out for you.
Sweet. No groaning in the audience, Bob. Stop. All right, so we have a lineup of seven different bottles here. What you're going to take us on a little mead journey here, Ryan. So where do you want to start?
We are going to start either at a very high point or a very low point by tasting a watermelon mead, which is with watermelon juice and alfalfa honey.
We made a beer with watermelon juice at one point, didn't we?
We did. We called it Melon Blood.
We did, because it was for a Halloween episode.
That's right. And it was actually, when we made it, when we made the beer, it was watermelon colored. So it was pretty and pink. Well, Molly Ringwald wasn't there, but it was still pretty and pink. And then, but when it fermented out, it looked like a normal wheat beer, which is really what it was.
Yeah.
And it didn't taste all that watermelon-y, and we didn't like it that much. But then we let it set for a long time. Do you remember this?
Yes.
We let it set for a long time, and then we came back to it one day and went, oh, my stars, that tastes like watermelon. It was amazing.
Yeah, it went through a little transformation. Yeah. I believe I used Belgian yeast on that, or we used Belgian yeast on that.
I don't remember that part.
So, yeah, it came back. It came back later on. It was a lot more tasty than what it originally was. So we are familiar with the concept of a watermelon beverage being either really good or really bad, having one that was a little of both. So talk about the recipe.
This recipe, actually, and I said alfalfa honey, and I apologize. It is was a 1 gallon batch. It was actually orange blossom honey.
Oh,
so
wow.
1 gallon of watermelon juice with 1 pound of orange blossom honey. And this one I used champagne yeast on. It was 1118. And just a touch of Fermate O, just to make sure we had a strong fermentation off the bat. This one was started in July of last year, so just about a year old. It started out a beautiful, what I call baby girl pink kind of color, and it faded to a straw as that faded out, as you'll see here as we pour. But that's it.
Oh, very good. So, yeah, the pink seems to have faded completely from this as well. So we know that, or at least from our two experiences, it would appear that the red color from watermelon juice tends to fade over time. So we'll cheers,
cheers,
everybody.
Cheers.
Thanks, Ryan, for bringing the meads and sharing. It's not bad. I'm trying to think of some descriptors, but maybe I'll go around the room if somebody else is ready first.
I actually think I do pick up the watermelon, and it also tastes a little like straw. I get like if you go out in the fields, you know, and you work the fields, like you're a hardworking field guy, and you pick up a piece of straw out of the field and you chew on the straw in the field, it tastes like that. It's a very clean, grainy sort of taste, and I get that in this mead.
First off, was this a seeded watermelon or unseeded?
That's a great question. It's not in my notes. I believe unseeded.
It tasted seeded to me, but but it's very drinkable, very good. I don't catch the watermelon very well because I'm not a sensitive palate, but it's very drinkable, very drinkable.
Yeah, it's bright. I get a fruit character of some sort. I don't know if you'd told me that this was a watermelon mead, I'm not sure that I would, it would jump out at me, but defend yourself, Steve.
Well, I just would say that I'm not sure I would have said it was watermelon, but I definitely get melon. I'm not sure that I would have been able to identify, well, yes, that's watermelon, but it's very melony, and we eat quite a bit of melon at my house, so the flavor is, you know, I mean, it's like we eat cantaloupe and honeydew and, you know, all summer. I love it. So I get that. I do get melon. But I agree, I'm not sure I would have said, definitely that's watermelon.
I was going to say honeydew, and then I realized that it was a pun because it's a mead. Yeah. But I do get like a honey, maybe I'm getting the honey character, and then the honey with the melon. It tastes to me, the more I taste it, more like a honeydew, or I'm talking myself into it. So what do you think, Ryan?
You know, I brought all these bottles last week and had my brother kind of help me do a taste test because I didn't want to put anything in front of you guys that wasn't very good.
Thank you.
and he said that he got watermelon rind out of it, like a salted watermelon rind.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah. So talk to us about the honey selection. What was the decision there?
I wanted something that was going to be a little bit bright and a little bit citrusy. Knowing that watermelon is a very weak flavor, naturally. I mean, now, you eat a watermelon Jolly Rancher, it tastes nothing like watermelon, right, but that's what people's frame of reference is for what watermelon tastes like. Right. And so I wanted something a little bit bright against that very weak or, you know, water subdued flavor that a watermelon has.
Well, that's delicious. And what's the ABV? Did you say the ABV?
I didn't. This is going to be right around 5-6%.
Oh. Mm, that's nice.
Yeah, it's nice and drinkable. It's very, I would say, refreshing is a word that I use a lot, but I'd say it's refreshing and very tasty.
It's delicious.
Steve's catchword. Very nice. It would be one that would be nice if it were carbonated.
So it would be kind of a
spritzer.
Yeah.
So nice, very nice. Okay, that was mead number one.
Mead.
We go to mead number two. So you make a lot of meads there, Bob?
My very first brew was mead. Oh, it was a kit. I really didn't. I didn't have all my stuff lined up right, and I didn't do it very well. It sat in a glass carboy for a year in one of the closets, and it didn't taste very good. But then I bottled it, and lo and behold, I found out it was a stuck fermentation.
Oh.
And I ended up with a very, very, very sparkly champagne type, and it was great. It was the best mead I've ever had. And to this day, well, and of course, it was the first thing I ever brewed too. But it sat there, and I didn't put any yeast or anything in there, nutrients, and I guess moving it around, that's what did it. Lucky I didn't have any bottle bombs.
Yeah,
but
I was gonna say.
But I had it for years. It was excellent.
Okay, we've moved on to the. Moved on to the second one. This one is a. Darker color. It's almost a. Would cola? No, it's not dark enough to be a cola color. It's more of a. It might be kind of a beer color.
It's kind of coppery.
So.
Yeah, like a red ale or something, maybe.
It doesn't smell like a beer. What do we got here, Ryan?
This is what I call blueberry rested. And it is a lot of times what I'll do when I want to play with different flavorings or seasonings is I'll make a 5-gallon batch of traditional, which is, you know, just an unflavored honey water yeast. And then I'll break that off into 1-gallon batches, and then I'll add flavorings in secondary or stabilize and then add here. So what this is, again, a session strength mead, about 5% ABV. It's a wildflower that was fermented totally dry. And what I did is then in a 1-gallon batch added 1 cup of frozen wild blueberries and let that sit for, 3, 6, 9, about 10 weeks. I sat on the frozen wild blueberries for about 10 weeks. They were not crushed. I did not, you know, break the skins, really muddle them down. So, and blueberries tend to stay pretty watertight as long as that skin is there. So this is what I call blueberry rested, just resting on top of the blueberries.
I think it's very nice.
It's delicious. And I'm curious, though, why didn't you break the skin? Why didn't you expose the pulp?
I didn't know the skin was that hard.
So you tried?
You freeze the fruit, you know, you take care of the wild yeast that's on there, you muddle that, you know, that'll kind of tamper down any wild yeast, and it'll kind of, and with raspberries and strawberries, that works perfectly. But blueberries have this protective skin on them that doesn't break down without a little bit of force.
There you go. Good question, Steve. So what character do you get? What character do you get? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
I think I get blueberry. I mean, it's really good. It's very dry. Yeah. It's much drier than I would have thought or expected, I guess. And it's wine like. But what did you say what the yeast was?
Let me go back. 1116.
Well, it's very nice. It's very drinkable, and it's one that I would definitely have in place of a light red wine with my dinner. That's how I would drink it.
I was a little shocked when I first had it because I expected blueberry to be a sweeter kind of, you know, and it turned out to be very dry, and I was kind of shocked with it. And even I can get the blueberry out of there, which is amazing. So I'm really happy with that. But it's very drinkable. Yeah, very drinkable.
Yeah, Bob fell on his head a couple of years ago, and he lost his sense of taste and smell, but it's coming back. We're glad about that.
There is a nice little residual sweetness, though, and not a cloying sweetness. There's still some residual sweetness in this that's nice.
Yeah, I agree. It's not like overpowering, you know, like blueberry juice, you know, but it's nice and kind of subtle. I get the sweetness from the honey, even though it is fairly dry. But, you know, I've made some meads that have been way too dry, and they come out, you know, like astringent or, you know, kind of watery. And this is not that. This is, you know, it has enough mouthfeel in it to make it satisfying. But it's light enough to be, you know, sessionable and very drinkable. So, again, we didn't talk about the first one, but very cleanly fermented. You know, there's no, you know, off flavors or harsh flavors with it at all. It's very cleanly done. So what are your tips for making meads that are drinkable and without any harsh off flavors?
Well, my style of mead, I've been making mead for 3 years. So to people that are making it for 30, that's a very short time. To people that are just starting, that might be a very long time. What I've developed over those 3 years is that my style is I prefer dry, on the dry end. And I also prefer a little more sessionable strength. I mean, I brought 22-ounce bottles, and once or twice I might open one and have one myself in an evening. I think that you help yourself a little bit by having a little more margin of error if you're going session strength. For whatever reason, I think that if you use a good yeast, if you use good nutrients, Ricky the Mead Maker has been on your show a few times. He's been on mine as well. Those nutrients up front tend to kind of help, and they can take out some of that the process where error can come in of saying at quarter sugar break or one-third sugar break or things like that, adding new nutrients. I add my nutrients all up front, and I let it ferment dry. I do it at not a super cool temperature, mid to high 60s, and it comes out. And then time is your friend. I'd say that one of the number one sayings in mead that I live by is, when in doubt, age it out. Mm.
So did you do any, did you add any sorbates or anything to stabilize the beverage?
Yes, this one was stabilized before the blueberries were added so that it would, any of the sweetness from the blueberries would create a sweetness and not continue to ferment.
Oh, very interesting. Oh, glad I asked that question. No, but that's a good question. That's a good point in that if you're making a low gravity mead like this, that's probably an excellent idea to stabilize it before you add any fruit flavor or anything like that, because otherwise the yeast would just take off again and ferment the sugars from that fruit.
And with very little sweetness to balance out any tartness, if the blueberries had fermented, you'd be left with a very unbalanced mead of something very, very tart with no sweetness at all to balance it.
Yeah. The more I drink this, the more I like it. That's a good thing. All right. So here this is
this is very fragrant.
This is white wine looking, right? Oh my! There's a, what do you, should we do a blind guessing first on this one?
I get pineapple and or lemon, but I have no idea. This is what I'm smelling.
I definitely get lemon.
Yeah, I get lemon too, and it very smells good. I haven't tried it yet, but it really does smell lemony.
Wow.
What should it be, something like apricots?
Yeah, that's brown sugar. Oh. Okay, so is it lemon?
It's actually, no, yes, it is lemon.
It's almost like key lime now. The more I drink, it's good.
But it's not only lemon.
Okay, all right, here we go.
What this is a, again, this is one that when I make again will be carbonated. But this is has ginger, lemon, and lime.
Oh, there you go. Wow. So that, I got the lemon in the nose, and then I tasted it. It tastes kind of like a key lime pie. You know, key lime pie, there's, you get the lime flavor in there. It's kind of sweet. Mm-hmm. And boy, and the ginger, now that you say that, of course, I'm going to say I taste it. But it's nice and, it's not like a ginger beer. It's nice and subtle and well blended, I think.
Yeah, I mean.
It's delicious.
It's delicious. No, it's very nice, and it does have, I completely agree with the key lime pie statement. It's tart. I like ginger, and so I like the ginger
I like
treatment.
Marianne.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bob.
Bingo. And but again, I'm curious about fermentation times, fermentation temperature. So enlighten me.
Well, let's get Bob's.
Oh yeah.
Before Bob. He forgets, before he drinks it all and then forgets what he drank.
Well, actually, I always was a Marianne guy, but. When you say ginger, I can really taste it, because I do a lot of ginger, and I'm surprised that I didn't catch it right off the bat. I knew there was something else there besides the lemon, but I've been doing ginger sodas, ginger beers, ginger this, ginger that, and I didn't catch it at first, but now all of a sudden it's smacking me.
So again, I'm sure you'll talk to us about it, but I'm curious about if you used raw ginger or ginger extract or how you approached that.
So again, this is one that I created. It was a 5-gallon batch of traditional that had 10 pounds of Minnesota wildflower honey and 11-16 wine yeast. And then after that, I stabilized that batch and then broke it off into 1 gallon, 5 1-gallon carboys. And this one, I added 1 cup of fresh chopped ginger. Wow. The zest of 1 lemon and the zest of 1 lime, and let it sit on that for 6 weeks.
Mm. Wow, the zest really, it really had an impact. I mean, and I'm kind of surprised, I guess, that it was that much ginger. Or am I wrong?
I'm not surprised. Remember, we did a show a long time ago where we made all kinds of ginger things, and we put a lot. We made like ginger cookies or something, and we used like candy ginger and real ginger and ginger powder, and we were like, that's a lot of ginger. But then when we ate it, we went, this is really good. My point being that I think people underuse ginger. They are. It's like it's such a strong flavor. I mean, if you pinch off a piece or slice off a little slice of ginger and eat it, it's like wow.
Yeah.
But I think it. I won't say that you couldn't get too much, but I think that people underpitch ginger, and then they don't get the impact that they want from it.
Is that reflected in your experience, Bob?
Absolutely reflected. Absolutely. I go along with everything you said.
And again, I'm surprised at you know that the zest of course it's in 1 gallon, right? So yeah. So the zest of one lime and the zest of one lemon could bring so much lemon and lime character to this beverage. And especially on the nose, it's just that lemon just jumps right out at you. It's delicious again.
Thank you very much. When I started out creating this, what I wanted to do, and again, it's flat now, but if it were carbonated, what I was trying to do was not mimic a ginger ale, but have you be reminded of a ginger ale when you had it. Now, in the Twin Cities, and you know we're in Minneapolis for HomebrewCon, one of the Minneapolis signature drinks is called a Big Ginger, which is Irish whiskey with ginger ale and a lemon and a lime. Huh. And what I thought was of creating a higher ABV version of this and adding some whiskey-soaked oak cubes and seeing if I could kind of not again, recreate that beverage, but have you be reminded of it when you had this.
Huh. Yeah. Interesting. I mean, you say
big ginger, huh?
Yeah, big ginger.
I'm going to get one of those tonight.
Downstairs in the bar.
Yeah.
I wonder what they'll do. We witnessed a Harvey Wallbanger being ordered the other night. Takes you back.
Takes you back.
But yeah, if you, I wonder if you were to combine like, Sprite, which is the lime. Don't they do in Sprite the lemon?
Yeah.
Lemon lime, and then some ginger ale, and then a little bit of sweetness, a little bit of honey in there. Boy, that's tasty. This one is, I would say, it's a little darker than the previous one, but not as dark as the second one. This is not as strongly flavored as the last one. The last one kind of spoiled us on our tasting.
The fragrance is really nice.
Mm. I'll say that again. The fragrance is really nice. It's very fragrant in a kind of a lovely sort of way, where the lemon one was kind of in your face and like, hey, I'm lemon. But this is like really soft and delicate, and I won't hazard a guess as to what it is because I honestly don't know. But I would say I will guess and say something like hibiscus or, I mean, I don't really know, but it's soft in that way. So I'll be curious.
And the balance of the flavors, I think I'm getting more of the honey character than whatever flavor is added.
Yeah. It seemed very soft. Like you said, soft and delicate, and that's what it was when I put it to my nose and drank it. You know, well, of course, we're coming off something that was sharp,
yeah.
So maybe it's accentuated. But I couldn't pick out anything in here. I mean, I couldn't name it right now. I have no idea what's in there, but it's good.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, it's good. I think, again, it's fair. It's, I'd say it was. It's a low gravity mead. There is satisfying mouthfeel. You know, it's not overly thin. It's not overly thick.
Right.
But it's along the lines of the previous ones.
The honey notes in this one too. The honey notes are really nice in this one too. I'll go so far as to say it's at the moment this is our fourth one. This is my favorite. I really like this. This is really good.
Stepping out there.
Stepping up.
All right, Ryan.
It's really interesting to hear you say that you enjoy the mouthfeel or that you like the mouthfeel in this one. This is actually all the previous three that we've had, the blueberry, the ginger, and now this one, were all born of the same 5 gallon batch before they were broken off. When this one was stabilized, what I added was 4 ounces of tart cherry juice. And 1 bourbon barrel stave. About six inches in length, you know, and maybe a quarter inch, you know, wide. And it sat on that for about 10 weeks. And so what I think you're getting in that mouthfeel is that oak, is the oak coming through. This is so when I first wrote it down in my book, I wrote cherry bourbon. Now you're not probably getting much bourbon, but if you go back and think about it, you might be getting a little vanillin from that oak.
How long ago did you bottle it?
This one was bottled right around the new year.
So it's been a while. Even talking me into it, I don't get an oak or bourbon, but I do. I like it. I like it a lot, but I'm not sure that I get all of that. And maybe it's just that it's, you know, over time it's all blended together and it's come together into something of its own.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where if any one of the components weren't in there, you would know it. But so it's the sum of its parts are greater than the individual parts. And I still, the cherry is very, it's very nice and it's very soft and it's very nicely done. It's, and I guess I knew it wasn't really hibiscus, but I couldn't put anything else on it. It was just that kind of soft roundness. So the cherry, yeah, that's great.
Have the flavors evolved over time in this one?
They did. Back in late December, when I bottled it, on December 28th, the bourbon was much more prevalent, and the cherry was much more there as well. It has definitely mellowed, it has definitely softened, but as you all have said, it works.
Yeah,
and I don't think it's oxidized. I don't think it's aged in any negative way.
It's round and mellow, and I think people that would expect an after-dinner sweet drink would like this, even though it isn't, to me, it isn't sweet, you know. But I think they would like it because it's got that mouthfeel, and it's just got that little bit of flavor in there that's very subtle. And you know, I think part of being subtle is you don't consciously do it, or you know, but suddenly in the back of your mind you're thinking, what is that? What is that? What is that? And that's part of the enjoyment of a good wine or a good meat or a good beer.
Yeah, right.
And I think this would hit it because I enjoyed it. I mean, I really, really liked it.
Yeah, part of the fun for me on something complex is trying to figure out what the heck's going on. And if something is really on the nose, like, here's some cherry drink, you know, it's fun, but it's not as interesting as sitting and trying and savoring and maybe, you know, don't try it. Whoop.
It's a lively little bee.
That one's trying to get out.
Catch those bees.
But in the old days, before they knew it caused cancer, you know, maybe a cigar would go good with that.
Maybe. You think?
Yeah. Kids, don't try that at home.
You know, you're saying you're kind of hungry. Well, I don't know. I've had watermelon. I've had blueberries. I've had cherries. I've had ginger. Let me forget the last one. But I'm full.
You've had a salad bar.
People say I've been full of it for years.
Yeah. I think you're full of it, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and plus, let me, on one final note on that one, I would not want that one to be carbonated.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas the lemon lime ginger would be fun if it had some sparkle to it, but I wouldn't carbonate the previous one. This one, it seems to be bubbly. It's kind of cloudy. The other ones have not been cloudy. It is a dark golden color.
If it's a cloudy mead, it's one of those West Coast meads.
East Coast
meads. Ah, I blew it.
Let me clarify here. We're moving on to Braggots.
I was going to say.
And yours is cloudy because you had the last pour and it was bottle conditioned.
Oh, yeah.
I got the cookie.
Give a definition for a Braggot.
That is an excellent question, Stephen. I'm actually so happy that you asked that. The BJCP definition of a Braggot is a harmonious blend of malt and honey. Now, I'm going to contrast that with the BJCP definition of an alternative sugar beer. Alternative sugars could mean honey as well. You know, brown sugar, honey, molasses, etc. Which is a harmonious marriage of malt and the alternative sugar.
Huh.
Interesting.
It is.
Well, I asked the question because I once upon a time was trying to figure out, well, what the hell is a braggot? And from all of the reading that I did, there wasn't a definition that said, well, a braggot has to be 20% honey and, you know, 80% malt. Or there wasn't that kind of formula to it, which is what I was expecting. What I found were lots of literary references that were quite old that just said something like, you know, a cask of honey and a cask of beer and, you know, something like that. And so it was very kind of ethereal. And what I decided, right or wrong, but it's what I decided, was that if you make a beer and you use honey in the beer in a predominant way, meaning not just, say, to prime with it, then at some level you've made a braggot. And whether or not it's a honey wheat beer that has a pound of honey in it in the 5-gallon batch, or you've made a more substantial braggot where you've made a quite substantial mead and you've blended it with a more substantial beer, you might say, to end up with maybe even a still product that is a braggot. In fact, we had a braggot at Dry Dock in Aurora, Colorado one time that I will never forget. And it was, if I remember, it was very lightly carbonated and it was very substantial. I mean, it was a meal in a cup. And it was, but it was very good and very different from other braggots that I'd had and that I would define as one. Okay, I'm off my soapbox. But I'm curious if you would agree with me or disagree with me on that.
There's a lot of fake news out there these days.
Just specifically about braggots.
Yeah, exactly. And the predominant fake news about braggot is that it must be 51% honey. This is not true. How you define a braggot is do the malt and do the honey stand up together?
Right.
And, you know, is one not run over by the other? And you can achieve that in different styles of beer with different levels of honey and malt. And so what I will get to it when we have the second one, but there's going to be an aha moment between what constitutes a braggot, a beer, an alternative sugar beer, etc.
So do you want to talk about the recipes, details of this one at this point?
James, you're standing, and this is a long grain bill.
Sit down.
So I did steeping grains, and I steeped for 20 minutes at 165 degrees of the following: 8 ounces of German Kolsch malt, 2 ounces of Bonlander Munich malt, 2 ounces of Caramel 10 malt, 2 ounces of Canadian honey malt, and 2 ounces of Belgian aromatic malt. Now, we were just at the keynote address where Charlie Papazian got up and, you know, and got the crowd riled up. And the reason that the Belgian aromatic is in there is because on one of your shows, Charlie said that I throw a handful of Belgian aromatic in every beer I make.
Well, there you go. Ripples. It's all about ripples.
Now, because, you know, I let you bench test everything, and you're the master of the 15-minute boil. Yeah. I did a 15-minute boil on 1 pound of wheat dry malt extract. I threw in 1 ounce of U.S. Magnum. Now, when I did this, what I found is that, I know, again, I was steeping at 165. When I pulled out the steeping grains, I threw in the hops, the 1 ounce of Magnum, as it was coming to a boil. Mm-hmm. After it was truly boiling for 15 minutes, and I turned off the fire, I threw in 1 ounce of German Hirschbrucker hops, and then when it was a little bit cooler, added 2.8 pounds of Northern Wildflower honey.
Wow.
And that, and then I, that the OG was 1060. Mm-hmm. I used some kind of yeast. There was yeast involved. I used Y yeast, Kolsch yeast.
Huh.
Y yeast Kolsch, and it fermented down to 1015, which means we are at approximately a 6.25 ABV at a 35 ABU. I'm sorry, 35 IBU. I don't know who ABU is, but we're talking IBU.
Wow.
Good.
That's a lot of stuff.
It's a lot of stuff. It's really good. I mean, I don't have a lot to say. I mean, it's just a nice beer or a bracket.
Yeah, I think it's switching gears between the honey beverages to a beer that has honey in it. I do take there is honey character in it, and I don't know if it's the honey malt or it's the honey itself, but yeah, there's definitely honey in there.
Yeah, it's strongly honey flavored, but it's not like you. I don't know, made a tea of honey and then pour a little beer in it. I mean, it's very complex. And yeah, the honey malt, I think honey malt really adds a strong honey character to a beer. And so adding a little bit of that, it punches that honey flavor up. And in some ways, when you make a honey beer, if you ferment the honey all the way out, you lose the honey. But honey malt will leave the honey flavor in no matter what you do. So there you go.
Oh, you stuck that in my face, didn't you? Oh.
Don't throw me straight lines like that.
You know, I got to be honest. It's of the flight. Again, it's not my favorite, but I like it. It's interesting. There's a lot going on in there. Yeah, yeah.
I might like a little more carbonation in it. Mm. And otherwise, I like it quite well.
Yeah.
And I don't dislike it. I mean, I'm just saying that, you know, if I could goose it just a little bit more atmosphere in there, then I would do that.
So now, this one's dark.
Oh, yeah.
And carbonated. If you want some carbonation, this one's got a nice head on it. Very dark. Ooh, it smells of...
stone fruit.
A lot of stone fruit.
There's,
I haven't tasted it yet. It kind of smells like a stout, or you know, stout like to me.
Yeah, brown sugar, roasty, kind of coffee character in the nose. I haven't tasted it yet.
Oh, I've tasted it. And you know what? If somebody says, "Wow, that's a nice stout," I'd say, "Yeah, it really is. It's really very good." Can't imagine what's in there.
All right, Ryan, I'm going to taste it while you talk about what's in there.
Okay. This is a Boucher Braggot.
Mm, that's what I figured.
Now, what I'm also going to tell you, gentlemen, because we had that aha moment, I told you one was coming, so now I'm going to give it to you. This one, if you taste it, you'll taste mostly beer, or all beer.
No.
Maybe, you know, Bob's telling me it's a beer.
Yeah.
This won a gold medal as an experimental beer, and it won a silver medal as an experimental mead.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
In what competition?
Well, we had two different competitions. We had the Minnesota Mashout and the Cinco de Mayo homebrew competition. I don't remember. But the point is, I want to go back to that fake news of a percent of honey and malt, meaning that that's what a braggot is. A braggot is whatever you pick honey up on in. Now the early beer that you drank, that later one, I call that the beer snob's lawnmower beer.
Mm.
And that was 60% malt, 40% honey. And you guys all picked up the honey.
Mm-hmm.
This is 50-50 malt and honey, and I'd guess you'd have to hunt for the honey.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I've had Boshe Meads on two occasions, one from Matt Whitey, mm-hmm. and Tim Lieber with his Crock-Pot. And the character that comes from those is coffee and toffee and, you know, all these dark flavors that blend wonderfully with a stout or something like that. So kudos. This is really a delicious beer.
Thank you.
How'd you burn the mead?
So this started off, I took a quarter pound of roasted barley and a quarter pound of chocolate malt, and I cold steeped them for 24 hours. And then I boiled 6 pounds of wildflower honey for 40 minutes until I felt or smelt a toasted marshmallow aroma. That was 40 minutes. Immediately then I took the pot off the fire. I added this is a single pot brewing here. Added the water, added 6 pounds of dark liquid malt extract. I did a 60-minute boil of 1 ounce of Columbus hops, a 20-minute boil of the Cascade hops. I should mention at the 60-minute mark, I threw in that cold steep of the roasted barley and chocolate malt. I used Cefal USO5. It started out at 1090. I'm a bricks guy, so that's 23 bricks for you keeping a score at home. After 10 weeks, I racked it onto – now this is where it gets interesting. After 10 weeks, I racked it onto 7 ounces of toasted coconut.
Oh.
Now, you might ask yourselves, why 7 ounces? Why not 6? Why not 8?
Whole, I just asked myself that.
Whole Foods sells them in 7 ounces.
There you go.
And one split vanilla bean.
Wow.
Yeah. I then let it sit on that for 12 weeks. And then a little priming sugar, a little US 18. I'm sorry, 1118. And let it pry, you know, that's where your head's coming from, a little 1118 and 5 ounces of priming sugar. And that's what we have here.
Wow. It's delicious. It is, it's like a 9 or 10% beer, right? It's on up there. But it drinks like a 5% beer. The body, it's not like syrupy sweet. So it's not like you're drinking like an imperial stout.
It's clocking in at about 8%.
Okay. Yeah, it doesn't taste like an 8% beer at all.
I mean, I don't know what I would have. That's delicious, and it's a very complex flavor. It's not a kid beer, and it very much reminds me of a Russian imperial stout without the thick gloppiness. Mm-hmm. So I like that style of beer, but I can't drink much of it. And a lot of times I don't like it, meaning it's like, ugh, I just don't want that right now. This kind of brings all that to the table without it being the sweet, sticky, syrupy kind of thing. And I like the burnt, cooked honey flavor. I like that. And again, I've been with you when we've had the other Boshe Meads, and I liked all of them that I've had. They've all been very different. Very creative. I mean, I really want to commend you. The way that he's approached how to make these is a very creative use of ingredients, a creative use of malt extracts, and of finding ways to blend incongruous things together into a whole that's better than it would have been on their own.
Follow that, Bob.
That's hard to follow, but it's true, right? Right off the bat, that it almost like a Russian stout or a bourbon barrel, but it's not thick.
Right.
You know, it's not diesel oil, that kind of tarry thing, which I like. But I can see why I want a medal, and I would definitely make this anytime. This is very flavorful. I can catch a lot of stuff which I normally wouldn't catch, and the fact that it's very drinkable. In fact, if I had this at home, I think I'd be in big trouble. I would be, because this is great stuff. I congratulate you on this. It's very flavorful, and I think anybody would like it. I mean, really, it's good.
Very good.
Yeah, it's delicious, as we say. But, the mouthfeel In using malt extract, you know, you might sometimes have a gloppy character, and maybe that, you know, maybe without the malt extract, maybe it would be too thin. So, well done.
Thank you very much. It means the world to me that, you know, Steve, Bob, James, you guys all, you know, have nice words to say about this. It's great. You know, with meads, time is your friend, and I will oftentimes extreme to the untrained eye, extreme efficiency is often confused with laziness.
Tell that to my wife.
Yeah. You know, my wife tells me to do something, and I say, you don't have to remind me. I'll get to it. She tells me every 6 months. I don't know why she's bugging me.
Honey, I'm just being extreme.
That's right.
Extremely efficient.
That's right. You don't have to remind me.
Well, this has been wonderful. And Ryan, thank you very much. Everybody, check out the Mead House. If you can get advice from the Mead House to do things like this and do them well, then it's worth a listen. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. This is it's been a pleasure.
Welcome.
Well, thanks again to Ryan. Delicious stuff. Be sure to check out the Mead House podcast. And, of course, thanks to Steve and Bob for helping to sample. It's about time for me to make another mead. Always good to have inspiration before doing so. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. Get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our logbooks so you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all that out at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Yoga Body Jumbo Yoga Massage Balls with Canvas Bag and Outside Pride Deer Proof Wildflower Seed Mix. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.